In Tunes with Dr. Kirsten Zemke.
Morena Kirsten, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. I thought there was something wrong with our connection as well with those phones now.
We just like to keep people on their toes. That's how it works at BFM. Hey, how have you been? What are we talking about this morning?
Wow. Well, I thought it was straightforward, and it is going to be a beautiful genre, and we're going to have, you know, so many interesting things. But the name of it is no really good name. So I called it 60s American folk music.
Okay.
But I saw it called 60s folk revival,
mm-hmm.
urban folk revivalists.
Ooh.
And there's a weird blur between protest music, because some of the protest music from the 60s was not this folk music.
Yeah.
But you'll know it when you hear it, and it was a really great sort of burst of this genre. So folk music in itself is a term that means any music that's basically not pop, not classical, or not jazz. So, you know, Māori music, most of it is folk music.
Okay, so it's not, you know, necessarily, I mean, like banjo, guitar kind of sounds.
And this stuff is kind of, I guess, singer-songwriter.
Mm.
Which, you know, some people will call folk, but folk music just means it's sort of distributed by folk, by the people, rather mm-hmm. than sort of the mass media, like popular music. And it's more open to just communities to make rather than classical where you need training. But, okay, so there was a connection with actual early American folk music. Artists like Pete Seeger and some mm-hmm. actual folk artists.
So what era are we talking about for them? What era is that?
Well, they were a lot earlier, like 40s and 50s.
Okay.
And they started doing, I don't know, the music started getting popular among the sort of countercultural sort of hippies.
Mm.
And they started doing this sort of very protest music in response to like the civil rights movement, the war in Vietnam. And sort of people like Bob Dylan started having like mainstream success with this, you know, so-called folk style.
Yeah.
So sometimes they'll call it folk rock, because there was rock bands like The Byrds did a cover of Dylan's Tambourine Man.
So there's all this slippage between the genres. I'm going to hit the first track right now.
Yep.
Where have all the flowers gone? Long time passing. Where have all the flowers gone? Long time ago.
I'm not going to lie, I absolutely love Joan Baez. I think she's got the most incredible voice.
She's amazing.
She is incredible, yeah.
Amazing voice. And then she really was a real activist.
Mm.
I mean, she was involved in all the protests and the anti-war movement. She gave part of her taxes to stopped paying her taxes because she didn't want it going to the military.
Go Joan.
And she's still going.
Yeah.
She performed at Standing Rock in North Dakota, the women's marches, and just, you know, like, she lives it for real. It's just an affect. And she sang We Shall Overcome at the march in Washington in 63 when Martin Luther King gave his speech.
Amazing.
She just really connected. But yes, this beautiful voice. She sort of also is credited with sort of introducing Bob Dylan to this New York Greenwich Village folk rock scene. I mean, her music's not rock. I mean, hers is more like just folk. And the song was literally written by Pete Seeger in 55.
Yeah.
From a Russian folk song.
Wait, this is the track we're listening to now.
It is connected to folk.
Where Have All the Flowers Gone? Is this a Pete Seeger song?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and he published it first in a magazine, you know, so this is just really this sort of folk, you know, zine community.
Yeah, that's awesome.
About Tsarist Russia, and that, you know, the sort of cyclical nature of girls pick flowers, men pick girls, men go to war and fill graves with their dead when they get flowers. Woof.
Aye, aye. It's a big one, eh? We've had a text in saying, is Bob Dylan post-electric guitar folk? So once he started picking up the guitar, people got really furious with him and said he was, you know, not true to his...
Yeah, he added this electric folk, which some people felt was a sort of leaking that sort of capitalist pop rock into, you know, their folk scene.
Yeah.
It wasn't just musically, but it also allowed the blur to go back the other way, that this sort of protest folk became mainstream music.
Mm.
And it, I don't know, this story reminded me of Linda Ronstadt that we talked about a few weeks ago. These women that are just so beautiful. Because she dated, okay, obviously Bob Dylan for a few years. She also dated Mickey Hart of the Grateful Dead and Steve Jobs.
Oh, what? That is not something I knew. That's crazy. Go, Joan.
So, yeah, just like, one of the great voices and great people.
Yeah, amazing person. And I think her story is interesting as well because so often people come at her from the Bob Dylan angle and they're like, oh, she was Bob Dylan's girlfriend. And that's just such a reductive way of talking about her because she had a whole, well, she has a whole amazing career that's completely separate to him. And, you know, he owes a lot to Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan owes a lot to Joan Baez, is what I'm trying to say. I'm sure there was a bit of a handshake going on of helping each other out.
Well, because apparently she brought him into this Greenwich Village coffee house scene, you know, that, and she, some people think his songs are best when they're sung by her.
So we've got a question come in. Oh, there's the audience. We've got a question come in about kind of what was going on with the UK folk scene, like Bert Jansch, you've got John Renborn, Pentagle, Fairport Convention, etc. So we're talking about predominantly American music here. What was the difference between what was going on in the UK and what was going on in America as well?
Well, yeah, luckily I called it American folk before I got into it and realized, that, you know, just to put a circle around what we're playing today. But yes, it did launch, well, not launch, but this revitalization of what was already kind of there, this British folk music as well. And what's interesting is the song we're playing now is actually an Australian band from Melbourne.
So how do they fall into this kind of American thing if they are from Australia? Is that where they had their popularity or what's that about, Kirsten?
No, they weren't that popular in America, but I just felt stylistically and movement-wise and timing-wise,
they certainly
had this sound of, it's one of these iconic, because of this, well, also this style with the group, you know, this is very iconic for American folk to have this group with the female vocalist, the harmonies, the
snappy little mod suits
instruments.
The joys of love are fleeting.
So this is the Seekers with "The Carnival Is Over." So this one's got less of a protest kind of aspect to it. Am I right in saying that, or have I missed the point?
But it is also based on a Russian folk song.
Okay.
Everyone was getting into their Russian thing.
The Russian scene was taken off.
This maudlin sort of sadness and angst, you know?
Right.
And apparently in Aussie, this is just the song and people cry and they play it at the end of huge events.
When you need to get the people out, get them feeling their feelings and going home. Ooh, that little Spanish guitar sound.
But if anyone's seen the film A Mighty Wind, they sort of make fun of these bands that were like this in the States, Peter, Paul, and Mary, the Mamas and the Papas, with these sort of harmonies and guitar and banjo or, you know, a sort of stand-up bass. But this has got this sort of military drums.
Yeah, totally.
You know, that sort of, so it does give this sort of,
and this is
even
way,
though it's not overt, this connection to war.
I was going
to
say, this is way post-war in terms of, world wars, but right in the heart of kind of that Vietnam situation.
Yeah, yeah.
What I'm interested in, Kirsten, is you said this was kind of like part of the protest music sound of the 60s and the 70s, but what else was kind of sitting in that protest sound as well?
Well, we've got Simon and Garfunkel had huge pop hits, and theirs wasn't protesty. So this is why it's weird that there's protest music and there's this urban folk revival, which is a terrible title. but I was trying to do the music that sort of sat in between that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like I said, not all of it does, but I guess the sort of events
sailing
and community
over Vietnam,
Southeast Asia. Well, here we go. This one's a Vietnam one.
This guy is amazing.
Well, training is the word we use. Nice word to have in case we lose. Training a million Vietnamese to fight for the wrong government and the American way.
So Phil Ox, what can you tell us about Phil Ox?
Well, amazing. Part of the reason we haven't heard of him is he died really young. He died in the 70s. He had, he was bipolar and an alcoholic and ended up killing himself in sort of poverty in 76 at the age of 35.
That's really sad.
But a lot of people feel it was related to his sort of disappointment at the movement.
Right.
He was really activist and political, performed at the Democratic Convention in Chicago in 69 and got arrested. And then sort of spoke in court and used his song lyrics in court to defend.
You know, with
Abbie Hoffman and those sort of... Yeah, so like it's kind of relates to now, like, you know, really upset and disappointed by the police violence and you know, things that was happening. And this was the first song that really mentioned the Vietnam War by name. You know, like, let's not just talk about beautiful things and sadness, let's mention it.
Let's talk about Vietnam. Yeah, somebody said flashbacks. We were taught all these songs at primary school in the 60s.
Not this one, I don't know.
Some of these other ones.
Yeah, yeah. Which is so funny because they were part of this movement that Oaks was a part of that was more powerful.
Yeah.
He also had this weird thing. He was so disappointed in the politics not taking off that in 1970 he made a greatest hits album that was all original songs and wore a gold lamé suit designed by Elvis's costumer.
Wow.
Because he thought that would get people to listen to, and of course his fans hated it.
Yeah.
He just got really weird. You know, he killed off his identity and took a new name.
Wow.
It's this really sad, tragic story, but just this amazing, prolific
music.
Songwriter and activist, and his song's been covered by, like, Annie DeFranco and even Wyclef Jean, Eddie Vedder.
And is this kind of, like, for people like Phil Oakes and Joan Baez as well, was this, I guess, like, an angle in for white people to start understanding protests through music as well? Is that maybe a fair thing to say, or an entrance point that people had? Because obviously you've got lots of black traditions of music that were, you know, happening at the same time that were pushing big protest movements along as well. Was this kind of an entry point for that sort of hippie white movement?
I can agree with that. You know, either gaining knowledge to people that didn't know about it, because obviously the newspapers aren't reporting this anti stuff, you know, the maid zines, but it also centered a movement. You would go to these events, whether it's a big festival or a coffee house, and you would get yourself educated, or at least, you know, sort of find your allies. I guess I sort of feel like what's happening now, you know, people getting educated and finding out who else is feeling the same sort of discontent.
And it oftentimes comes through that pop culture or that, you know, music or art kind of angle.
Well, that's the weird thing, because I feel like folk music and or even just this kind of singer-songwriter, real plain music, you know, we don't often see in the pop charts during this period, which I guess was kind of the music I was trying to look at. I preferred the protesty ones, but you know, that it seems like a weird thing when people say folk music was in the charts, but this wasn't.
This wasn't the folk music that was in the charts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It had this edge, this political edge. And I think the reason it got popular is because you could talk about stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Someone's asked, does Arlo Guthrie count?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Arlo and Woody. But yeah, it's just whether their music can also be called, you know, either pure folk or country. Or, you know what I mean? Like, there's the music genre, but then there's also this wider circle of this sort of musical movement.
Totally.
That was grounded in folk, you know, used by the sort of political youth community and the scene. And or, like the other person wrote, and it just carries you back to the time.
Yeah, yeah, you know? Totally. Yeah. Well, thank you very much for bringing us American folk music with a kind of, like, a little bit of a question mark, because that name could be lots of different things, as you said.
That's right.
Kirsten.
And a question mark on protest.
Yeah.
And a question mark on...
hard out.
But we'll have to do
really
the British one
that.
Sometime.
Yeah, we will. That would be great. Yeah, to
and
talk
some
about
some amazing stories and personalities in this. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Well, thank you, Kirsten. What are you going to be bringing us next week?
We're going to do the Minneapolis sound.
Woo, the Minneapolis sound. Thank you. We'll talk to you then.
Okay.
That was Traveling Tunes with Dr. Kirsten Zimke.
It certainly was.